The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. It's time to bring out the Better Worldian in all of us. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio with your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. Better Worldians Radio inspires you with the people and ideas that are making the world a better place. You'll hear how small acts can make a big difference every day. Now, here are Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory.
Hi, this is Ray Hansel. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio. Better Worldians Radio is a weekly broadcast whose mission is to uplift and inspire you to make the world a better place. Every week, we speak with best-selling authors, film producers, TED speakers, happiness experts, and also everyday folks just like you whose small acts make a big difference. That's why we call them Better Worldians. And speaking of Better Worldians, let me introduce you to my co-hosts, Mary Sue Hansel and Gregory Hansel. Mary Sue has been a successful entrepreneur and business executive for over 30 years. She's also an avid practitioner of the healing arts, positive psychology, and spirituality. And now here's my life partner, Mary Sue.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be here with you today to share all the good that's being done in the world. Now, let me also introduce you to Gregory Hansel. Gregory has a background in philosophy and world religions, and most importantly, has spent over 15 years at the intersection of technology, social causes, and big ideas.
Hi, this is Greg. I'm so glad you can all join us here on Better Worldians Radio. Let me first just tell you a bit about my dad, Ray, who you just heard from. He's a serial entrepreneur who successfully founded and with Mary Sue took public a national marketing firm. Giving back has always been really important to Dad, who supports many causes, especially disadvantaged children and their families. And by the way, we're the family team that created the popular social game on Facebook called A Better World. It rewards players for doing good deeds while helping to raise money and awareness for charities. To date, over 22 million good deeds have been done in A Better World by more than 2.5 million people. Over the last 3 months alone, we have supported an after-school program designed to get kids involved in acts of kindness. We provided 100 children in need with backpacks full of clothes and books, and we funded surgeries that enabled 5 children in the developing world to walk for the first time. On this week's episode of Better Worldians Radio, we're discussing conscious capitalism, liberating the heroic spirit of business.
Joining us today is Raj Sisodia, the co-author of Conscious Capitalism. Raj is the Franklin Olin Distinguished Professor of Global Business and Whole Foods Market Research Scholar in Conscious Capitalism at Babson College. He's also co-founder and co-chairman of Conscious Capitalism, Inc. He has a PhD in marketing from Columbia University. Raj is co-author of the New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller Conscious Capitalism, Liberating the Heroic Spirit of Business. He was named one of the 10 outstanding trailblazers of 2010 by Good Business International and one of the top 100 thought leaders in trustworthy business behavior by Trust Across America for 2010 and 2011. Raj has published 7 books and over 100 academic articles. His book, Firms of Endearment, How World-Class Companies Profit from Passion and Purpose, was named one of the best business books of 2007 by Amazon.com. Raj, it's so great to have you with us today on Better Worldians Radio. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you.
You know, Raj, a better world is a social enterprise as well, and we're big believers in the conscious capitalism movement, so we're very excited to talk to you about these very issues and ideas. As a founding member of the conscious capitalist movement, tell us a little bit about what that means.
Well, we are very passionate about changing the narrative around what business is and can be and the role that it plays in society. Now, we think that there's been a very toxic narrative that is built up around business. And you know, the stories that we tell ourselves ultimately end up being reflected in our actions and on our reality. So for a long time, there's been this corrosive narrative that business is narrowly focused purely on self-interest, purely on profit, and that everything else needs to be a means to that end. And that is actually a damaging way to look at business, because it then creates as many harms and sometimes more harms in the world than it does good. And it's also not an accurate reflection of what truly great businesses are about. So we're recognizing that there is a purpose to a business that goes beyond profit. And that's really what enables business to have a positive impact in the world. So it starts with the idea of higher purpose. And we can get into the different tenets of conscious capitalism as we go along. But it was really recognizing that business has extraordinary power, extraordinary reach, extraordinary impact in our world. And if we don't practice it with a higher degree of consciousness about those things, that we can do as much harm as we do good through the institution of business.
Yeah, you actually call capitalism the greatest system for innovation and social cooperation. Talk a little bit about that for our listeners.
Yeah, so if you look at, what do we mean by capitalism? It's really free markets and free people creating the enabling conditions where people can come together, form organizations in order to do things that you cannot do individually. And really the birth of this can be seen in the last couple of centuries. So it's really only the latter part of the 18th century. And really we mark a turning point around 1776 with the publication of Adam Smith's classic book what's called The Wealth of Nations, an inquiry into the nature and causes of the wealth of nations, where he explained the power of markets. And of course the United States was born as an idea more than a country in that same year. And the combination of freedom, of political freedom, economic freedom, has really been extraordinary. So if you look at how much humanity has progressed in those last two centuries, after millennia in which our per capita incomes on a worldwide basis were $500 or less for almost all of history, which means 90% of people lived on less than $1 a day, you know, we've seen extraordinary gains in those last two centuries. We've gone up 15-fold on a worldwide basis, and about 100-fold in certain highly developed countries like the U.S. But our life expectancy has more than doubled in that time. Our literacy has gone from 10% to 90%. Our population has risen from 1 billion to well over 7 billion now. We have so many more human beings leading longer and more fulfilling and certainly far less miserable lives. In substantial measure because we have embraced this notion of freedom and allowed people to create value and then exchange value with each other in a systematic way, which has also had great deals of efficiency and technological innovation built into it.
A great deal to be grateful for.
Yeah, certainly.
You say that entrepreneurs particularly are the true heroes in a free enterprise economy. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, because if you look at the depiction of business people in our culture, actually in most cultures, movies, for example, books, etc., you will rarely find entrepreneurship and business enterprise celebrated. In fact, it's usually the villain of the piece. It's interesting that they remade the movie The Manchurian Candidate, which first came out in 1960, and that actually referred to the Chinese as controlling this this potential presidential candidate. And they remade it a few years ago, and in this time around, the controlling entity is a corporation. Right? So we've created this narrative where the villains are always the business people because they're greedy and selfish and exploitative, and that's kind of the story that we've told. But really, if you look at how we human beings have progressed, it's really the entrepreneurs that have taken the extraordinary risks that have gone out there and created things that we did not even imagine could exist, and have brought them into reality and have transformed our lives in the process. And I think the list is too long to even go through of all those innovations that have come out of the institution of business, not only products and services, but life-enhancing technologies of many different kinds. So, that has really enabled human progress to happen in a far more dramatic way than any other single institution in society. So we really believe that entrepreneurship needs to be celebrated. It is kind of the secret sauce to the extraordinary prosperity and not just material prosperity, but I think human flourishing that has been brought about. And we need to create the conditions where that is encouraged and celebrated and enabled, not only here but around the world, because that will create the opportunities and that will continue to uplift people. So even though We've gone from 90% living on less than a dollar a day to about 13% now. But that's still a lot. That's a billion people. And, of course, there are many other people who have many needs that are not yet met. So we certainly need to encourage more entrepreneurship. And we do that, I think, by celebrating the idea of entrepreneurship.
Now, in doing so, let's talk a little bit about the myth that profit is the sole purpose of business, whether it's an entrepreneurship or a larger public corporation. What is that myth all about?
This is a very toxic and narrow perspective that has been created, and we've tried to go back and look at where that came from. You know, we think the people who started enterprises early on, you know, had a deeper purpose for it. They were building communities, they were providing livelihoods, they were moving us forward. But sometime during the 19th century, I think the story got hijacked, and part of it was the loss of a moral and ethical foundation, which used to be kind of grounded in the Judeo-Christian traditions. And as we became a more secular world, some of that got lost. And then the economists came in and started to look at businesses, and they saw that the most successful, enduring businesses were also very profitable. And they started to create mathematical models and so forth. And they created elegant models which simplified what businesses are about, and they made it about profit maximization. And they said, well, that's the purpose of an enterprise, right? And that whole notion, of course, became the foundation for the Marxist critique, that this is about the few getting wealthy at the expense of the many, that this is people who purely just focus on the profit motive. And I think that whole narrative kind of got imbibed. It even started being taught in business schools that is your fiduciary responsibility, that the purpose of corporations to maximize profits. Milton Friedman wrote an essay in 1970 or so in the New York Times, and that kind of crossed over into the mainstream culture, and he basically said that the only responsibility or social responsibility of a business is to maximize its profits while staying within the law. And so all of these things kind of became imbibed and accepted. And, you know, as I said, it's done a lot of damage, because it's certainly not true of great businesses. And certainly not true of human beings in general. If you think about why do we do what we do in this world, you know, we don't just choose occupations simply in order to earn a living. Why does somebody have a passion to go through medical school and become a doctor? Well, hopefully somewhere inside them is a spark that has to do with the need to heal people, right? And that's something that's a passion for them. And people who go into law ideally should be driven by a keen sense of justice. Etc. So every profession makes reference to some kind of a higher purpose that relates to a societal good. Mm-hmm. Why do we then say that businesses are the exception to that they are the ones who are purely in it for the money? And I think every great business tries to do something great in the world. And through that, they, of course, generate profits. We need profit in order to grow, in order to continue to evolve, and actually to realize the purpose. But that's the means to the end. The purpose is something other than profit.
Let's talk about it. I wanted to get into that as the first of the four tenets that you mentioned in your book of Conscious Capitalists. Let's talk about that, because it doesn't start with profit. In fact, it's not even one of the four tenets. It starts with higher purpose. So does that mean for a corporation?
Well, it says that, you know, we have to find, just as I think our individual journeys as human beings, if you recall the book by Rick Warren, I think, called The Purpose-Driven Life, that came out about 8-10 years ago, and has become one of the highest-selling books of all time, 40 million copies. There is a hunger for meaning and purpose. We all want meaning and purpose in our lives. We want to know that we stood for something, that, you know, we were meant to accomplish something, that we did something other than just exist and earn a living, you know. Go to work and come home and watch TV and have dinner, go to bed and go to work and do it again. There's something beyond that. And I think for businesses as well, there is an inspiring energy that comes when you come together with a vision of something grand and something noble and something worth doing. And, you know, that releases extraordinary amounts of energy inside human beings. When people are inspired, they are capable of extraordinary things. And ultimately, every organization runs on human energy. Creative, inspired human energy is the differentiator in the world. And if you have a purpose that resonates with people, and if you can then identify the people for whom that particular purpose is meaningful, then it really creates the conditions for extraordinary innovation, for great amounts of caring, and also truly fulfilled human beings. Because when you are living your passion, then your work becomes not just a job or a career, but a calling. But I was born to do this. This is when I'm most fully alive.
So how does a company go, how does a company go about defining its purpose? And also, if it hasn't had that purpose, how does it sort of go about finding the purpose if it didn't always?
Yes. So a lot of companies had some kind of a sense of what they were trying to do, even though they might not have articulated it. You know, why did they come into existence? What was the need that they saw? What was the need that they were trying to fill? What was the passion there? So sometimes for an existing business, it means going back to your roots and finding out what made you successful in the first place and what was the passion and what's the underlying kernel there that relates to a real need in the world, right? Not just satisfying wants and desires, but actually fulfilling real needs that exist in the world. And then over time, sometimes those get, you know, as the company grows and evolves and comes under professional management and the founders go out of the picture, very often then it kind of reverts to the mean and becomes all about the numbers and the profit. So we have to excavate the original intention and the purpose by going back. If that doesn't result in identifying a purpose, then you can look at where are we today and where are we capable of contributing. How can we figure out what is the way in which we can add greater value in the world today that would inspire not only our employees but actually attract certain customers and communities would embrace us and so forth. So how do we distill that down into something that connects to what we do well, our core competency as it's called, right? But that should be in the service not just of profit but also in terms of what the world needs. And those needs change over time. So there are companies that start out with a purpose that is relevant and meaningful to the world, but then the world changes, the needs change. You know, if you look at fast food, you look at McDonald's and Coke and Pepsi. When they started out, we didn't have the same issues in the world around obesity and diabetes and all of those kinds of things, and there weren't that many artificial ingredients in the products and so forth. And now with the health crises that we have, those kinds of companies have to rethink their offerings. You know, when they came, they were offering great amounts of convenience and affordability and so forth, so there was a sense that they were doing something meaningful. So it's really a unique journey for every company. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're discovering, and this is my subject of my next book really, is that it doesn't always have to be, your purpose doesn't always have to be reflected in a noble product per se. And there are lots of products out there that are necessities that, you know, that we need to produce and have, and you know, you can't necessarily find an inspiring aspect to the product itself. But you can still, as a company, have a purpose that is around how you impact the lives of people. Because every company, it doesn't matter if you're making toilet paper or toothbrushes, you know, you impact the lives of many, many people. Not only the people who work there, but the, you know, their families, their communities, your customers. So if you start to think also in terms of how do we, a people-centered purpose, in addition to a product-centered purpose, ideally we have both. But certainly we should, we must make sure we don't lose sight of the people in the process.
People are critical. We're going to take a break right now, but we'll be talking more with Raj Sisodia and my co-host Mary Sue about the other four tenets of conscious capitalism when we come back. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
You're listening to Better Worldians Radio, and we're speaking with Raj Sisodia, co-author of Conscious Capitalism. And now let's welcome back Raj and Mary Sue.
Hi, Raj.
Hi.
You know, let's continue talking about the four tenets of conscious capitalism. The second tenet is stakeholder integration. First of all, would you tell our listeners what is a stakeholder?
A stakeholder is anybody who is impacted by your business or can impact your business. Obvious ones, of course, are employees and customers and suppliers, but investors and communities that you operate in. But beyond that, of course, there's other stakeholders, too, that might be somewhat secondary, but they still need to be considered. Regulators, for example, or unions, or public interest advocates, for example. There are all kinds of different, depending on the industry that you're in or the business that you're in, there might be different stakeholders to consider as well.
That's interesting. How does conscious capitalism actually integrate that concept?
So one of the biggest, challenges for business is that, first of all, looking at stakeholders in a different way. So the traditional way that companies, when you say that profit is your primary purpose as a business, then what you're saying is that the investor is the primary stakeholder. Mm. And so that's the end that you're trying to achieve, high results or high returns for investors. And everything else becomes a means to that end. Right, so you systematically trade off the interests of employees, of customers, even suppliers, communities, etc., in favor of the investor. And what we realize is that when you take an interconnected and interdependent system, which is what a business is, along with all of its stakeholders, you know, it's an intricately connected system where all of these entities are working together in order to create the ultimate value that the business is realizing. In any interconnected, interdependent system, if you start operating that system or running that system for the well-being of one part of it, the whole starts to suffer. Right? It's like saying my body is one big system, and if I start to systematically only favor one part of it and let everything else subside or not flourish, then ultimately that organism will die. Same thing is true of businesses. Right, so we have to look at how can we create not trade-off scenarios, right, which is what is very common in businesses. We look for trade-offs. We say, okay, I need to do more for my employees, because I'm not able to attract and retain talent, etc. But breaking that idea of trade-offs and saying that how can we create, instead of a trade-off implies a win-lose, how can we create a simultaneous win for all of the stakeholders? Right, so how do we align their interests together so that what's good for employees is good for customers, is good for suppliers, good for investors, etc.? And that's the real challenge of a conscious business, that they actually really address that issue very seriously. And if you take the creativity, human creativity is the one unlimited resource on this planet, and we don't deploy that often enough. And what these businesses find is that you can very often come up with a creative outcome that simultaneously delivers positive outcomes for the different stakeholders, and you don't have to make those trade-offs. So rejecting the idea of trade-off thinking across stakeholders and looking for the commonality of interest. And when you have a purpose, that makes it easier. Because all
stakeholders, how do you make the customer part of the team?
Customers, well, first of all, if you have a purpose-driven business and the customers care about your business in terms of what you're trying to do, right, so they are engaged with you at a deeper level than just simply buying your products and services. So you have a deeper relationship with customers. than just a purely transactional one. Because they are part of your ecosystem, they get involved in different ways with the business. So, with all stakeholders in a conscious business, you engage with them in a sort of a multiple dimensions way. So your relationships that your employees have with your customers, for example, or your customers are very often involved in supporting some of your nonprofit type of activities. So at Whole Foods, for example, they have the Whole Planet Foundation. Many of their customers are intimately involved in that. They actually support that that foundation through their donations and other things. So it becomes that we are part of, almost like we're part of the same movement. You happen to be a customer, I happen to be an employee, but we all believe in natural and organic food, for example, right, if you're in the Whole Foods space.
Right.
And many of their employees come from the ranks of their customers. Many of their customers become investors in the business if they truly believe in the business. They can buy shares in it, right? So it's possible for every stakeholder to wear multiple hats.
I was reading in your book, too, that employees are stakeholders. And that, Whole Foods really walks the walk. And they have a policy that all the employees know what everybody else is making. I was really surprised at that. And also that they have a practice of capping the top salaries to 19 times the average employee salary, as opposed to some companies I know is more than 100, right?
Well, the average, I think, out there, probably about 275 or 300 to 1. It's been as high as 500.
Wow.
So the CEO pay versus the average pay in the company, that ratio has been rising steadily for the last three or four decades. It used to be at the average company 20, 30 times and has risen now to in the hundreds. And, there's a lot of discussion around that issue. And, in fact, I'm working on a paper right now where we're looking at some data on the impact of that ratio, CEO pay to average pay, what impact that has on employee engagement, employee satisfaction, and also on customer satisfaction.
You found that out of curiosity, Raj.
Well, we are finding a negative relationship there, that the higher that ratio, the lower the level of employee engagement and employee satisfaction, because that reflects a culture that's in a company that is all about the profit, is all about the numbers, right? And you've got leaders who primarily care about that, and they're heavily incentivized, mm-hmm. basically, to increase profits. And they're not really creating an enterprise that is built upon purpose, that is engaging employees, et cetera. And that it is, in fact, treating employees as a means to that end and therefore paying them the bare minimum or as little as you can, right, as opposed to the other companies where they're actually treating employees as perhaps the most important stakeholder in many ways because they're the most invested, even more than investors. Employees are really invested in a business, right, because they're spending most of their waking hours there.
And, I'm sure if the employees are not happy, the customers won't be happy.
Exactly. So there's certainly a virtuous cycle to all of this, right? So when you operate in a conscious business mode, all of these things feed each other in a positive reinforcing loop, right? As you said, happy employees, satisfied employees, become more productive, engaged, provide great customer care. They're more innovative, so customers are happy and delighted. They buy more. They talk about it with others. Right, and you get the benefit of free marketing. You don't have to spend as much on paid media. And that, of course, generates better returns to investors. It also generates more money that you can use to invest in the community and the environment and all of those kinds of things. And it all feeds back into a virtuous cycle.
Speaking of those investors, how do you get the financial stakeholders connected to a business's higher purpose? It seems like it's difficult.
It is difficult. Certainly in the past, that has not been part of the discussion with investors.
Uh-huh.
It's always been around numbers and say, what are the profit margins and what's the growth rate and all of that kind of thing. But increasingly now we're finding that investors also care about what they're investing in, right? And first of all, that there are two kinds of investors. There are people who truly invest, which means that they have a long-term perspective, and they are trying to create something through that investment. And then you have the people who are short-term investors, which is really a contradiction in terms. There is no such thing as short-term investing. That is speculation. And that's not investing. You're just placing a bet and walking away. very quickly from the enterprise. So businesses need to be selective about their investors. They need to have investors who actually understand what they do and care about what they do, and to have a longer-term perspective. And recognize that when you have patience and when you understand and align with the purpose of the business, that in the long term, such businesses actually outperform. So it's in your best interest as an investor, even if you're purely interested in financial only, that if you identify companies with a higher purpose and then take a long-term perspective, our research shows that such companies, my firms of endearment that came out in 2007, that those businesses outperformed the market by a 9-to-1 ratio over a 10-year period. And we have a second edition of firms of endearment that just came out a few months ago, and we've got a larger set of companies, and over a 15-year period, those companies outperform 14-to-1 relative to the market as a whole. So in the long term, this is an extraordinary value creation system because it aligns all of the human energies in that system in the right way.
About the system, I wanted to make sure we talked about the third tenet, which is conscious leadership. Would you share your thoughts about that?
Yes, and this is, all of these are very critical, but I think, leadership, you cannot have a conscious business without conscious leaders. Now, what does that mean? Leaders historically have been motivated by some combination of three things. It's power, it's money, or it's a purpose. Mm-hmm. Right? And so we have sort of the military-style leaders, which are all about power. We have the mercenary leaders, who are all about money. And then we have the missionary leaders, who are all about the people and the purpose. And what we're seeing is a shift towards missionary leadership. That, we used to have corporations that didn't pay their CEOs very, very highly, if you go back 70, 80, 100 years, but they had extraordinary amounts of power. This was command and control, military-style organizations that we had, right? Whether it's Ford or AT&T or General Motors. You had 1 million people working there, and they do what you tell them. And then starting in the 70s, 80s, 90s, it became all about money. And CEOs started being compensated extraordinarily highly with huge amounts of stock options. And you started attracting people who primarily cared about money. And they knew how to manage the numbers. And then, and they were pretty ruthless. They didn't see human beings as real, flesh and blood people, but really just as resources, as assets, as costs to be minimized, etc. And so you had all of the things that we know about in terms of mass layoffs and so forth.
That probably gave us all that toxic feeling that you mentioned.
Exactly. And now what we're saying, the conscious leaders are truly motivated, first of all, by purpose and by people. Right? So they are servant leaders. Why does one become a leader? If it is to use other people to meet your goals and your objectives, which is what a lot of leadership has been traditionally, but that's not leadership, that's really tyranny. How is that any different from the kings of old, right, which basically used everybody, people were suffering around them and they were trying to prosper in the middle of all of that. So that's not leadership, that's tyranny. And so we need people who are primarily motivated by service, who are humble, who see this as an opportunity to serve and to create value and to improve the lives of others. Right, so they live in an other-centered universe. They have tremendous amounts of emotional intelligence, empathy, understanding of human beings. They have spiritual intelligence. They understand meaning and purpose and how important a drive that is for human beings, and they themselves have that. They have a systems mind. So they can see the whole. They can see the interconnections. They don't view business as a machine, with inputs and outputs. They view it as a living organism, and they understand how to create flourishing for the whole organism.
Raj, we only have a couple minutes left, and I did want to ask you, how can business owners and managers be more conscious?
Yeah, I think this is really a question for all of us. Right? We should all be on a journey of constantly growing and deepening our own consciousness. And there are some practices that certainly help in that. Contemplation, so it's the self-awareness, understanding yourself, developing personal mastery, using some form of contemplative techniques, meditation, for example, but also having experiences that that deepen your understanding of life and of other human beings. You know, and deepening your empathy and understanding and putting yourself, you know, in the shoes of other people and starting to recognize that ultimately what delivers the deepest satisfaction to human beings, as Viktor Frankl talked about, you know, happiness. Happiness cannot be pursued. Happiness ensues. It is the outcome of living a life of meaning and purpose. And getting in touch and asking those questions of oneself, what is my purpose in life? How do I derive meaning? And how can I deepen my own understanding of myself and others? I mean, that's all a journey.
Well, we're going to take another break at this point. This might be a good time for all of our listeners to actually contemplate some of this and really chew on it, because there's a tremendous amount to think about in terms of purpose. When we come back, we'll talk more about the final tenet of conscious capitalism with Raj Sisodia and my co-host, Greg. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
We're back now with Raj Sisodia, co-author of Conscious Capitalism.
Hi, Raj. This is Greg.
Hi, Greg. Nice to talk to you.
Nice talking to you. You know, a few weeks ago, we interviewed Bob Buford, who was a close friend of Peter Drucker. And in your book, you quote Drucker as saying, "Culture eats strategy for breakfast," which I loved. Tell us about the fourth tenet of conscious capitalism, the conscious culture and management, and what that means.
Yeah, so the culture is something that a lot of companies don't pay enough attention to. You know, every company has a culture, whether they realize it or not. Mm-hmm. But if you don't pay conscious attention to it, then it just evolves over time as a reflection of what seems to be valued and how we tend to do things around here. So it's kind of the how. You know, purpose is the why, and stakeholder is the what, and these conscious leaders are the who. And this is the how. How do we do things around here? How do we relate to each other? You know, what are the values that we seem to embody, that we seem to care about? And when that is done explicitly, and when we try to understand what are the cultural traits that we value, and then we promote those and we make sure those are reflected in our behavior and so forth, then that can become a very, very powerful source of competitive advantage, but also of energy and success for the business. Mm. And if we were to, so it is unique for every company, its culture based upon its history and what it's trying to do and the leaders. But we have tried to identify some of the qualities that we see in common across many conscious cultures. And that's captured in this mnemonic tactile that we use in the book. So it starts with trust. You know, you have to have a high level of trust inside the organization, between the employees and the leaders, but certainly across employees and then with customers and everybody else. That is the commodity that is actually in greatest need, or that's in shortest supply in the world, is trust. There's been a bit of an epidemic of decline in trust in general in society. And therefore, focusing on that is extremely important. And you build that through actions over time. Authenticity, accountability, transparency that we talked about earlier with salaries and other things, integrity, all of those are important elements, loyalty, egalitarianism, etc. The one I think that, to me, if I had to pick the most important differentiator between a conscious business and traditional businesses, has to do with the idea of caring, mm-hmm. or love and care. Because if you think about how most businesses operate, they operate with a tremendous amount of fear and stress. So that's how people are motivated, or that's how they think they need to motivate people, by putting a lot of pressure on them, by holding out these carrots and sticks, right, as we call them, the fear of losing your job or getting demoted or not getting a bonus, et cetera, et cetera. It's all the anxiety around that. And so we have created a culture in which people, for the most part, I would say 70-80% of people, do not look forward to going to work. Right, so we have, on the one hand, we say, thank God it's Friday. Right, we have a restaurant chain that, you know, that whole idea is pretty central to our culture. Nobody questions it. And then we have the statistic that heart attacks go up by 20% on Monday.
Yeah.
So people are truly experiencing significant impacts of the kind of toxic environments that exist. So if we create a business on love and care, what does that mean? That means people care about what they do. They're passionate about it, right? It's their calling. They believe in what the business is all about, and they have the care and respect of the people that they work with, right? Mm-hmm. So you love the people you work with, and you love what you're doing. Why would you not look forward? Work can be deeply meaningful and deeply satisfying. And as Sigmund Freud said, love and work are the cornerstones of our humanness. Mm-hmm. And yet we have separated the two completely.
Yeah,
right? We've said you do that in your rest of your life, and when you come to work, it's all about your self-interest and my self-interest. And the fact is that we're asking people to divide their humanity or their personas into these two and bring that less human half to work.
That's true.
And the real power.
I've worked for companies that have that kind of culture of fear. I won't name that. On the air, but that kind of panopticon, you know, always being watched experience, and it's amazing what that did to the culture. It was cynical and unhappy, and there's a distrust about one's managers and the company's motives, and, you know, and I've worked in companies that are the opposite, where people are really inspired by the missions and the vision of the founders and the company and what we're doing together, and it's night and day, you know.
It's extraordinary difference, because when you're operating out of fear, then you're, you know, if it's our physiological response to fear is to go into a survival mode, mm-hmm. right, where you're, it's flight, fight, freeze, or faint, essentially other responses, none of which are very productive in terms of doing extraordinary things in the world. So we can either operate out of fear or out of love. I mean, those are the two choices, and we need to create cultures where that is the predominant quality, where we truly care about each other as human beings.
Yeah.
We measure our success by the way we touch the lives of people.
You know, as an example of conscious management, I really love the story about the snowstorm at the Whole Foods in Connecticut.
Yes.
Could you share that with our listeners?
Yeah, so this was in the Hartford, Connecticut store, and this was a few days before Christmas, a couple of 3-4 years ago now. And there was a big snowstorm that was coming, so a lot of people were leaving work early and stopping by the store to stock up. And so the store was jam-packed and long lines at the checkout, and suddenly this store was going through a technology conversion of its systems, having been acquired from another company, and suddenly all of the cash registers stopped working. And, you know, they couldn't take credit cards, they couldn't take checks, they couldn't take cash, nothing. And so lines are growing longer, people are getting frustrated, the weather is becoming more ominous by the minute. And so the assistant store manager, the store manager wasn't even there at the time, the assistant store manager saw this and made a quick decision right on the spot and basically said to all of the cashiers that just, you know, get the customers through, bag their groceries and let them leave. And when they came to the front of the line and they said, okay, how do I pay? They said, no, you don't have to pay. because our systems aren't working, and we want to make sure that you get home safely. So Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, and be on your way. And so people were rather stunned by that. Some of them said, no, I'm going to come back tomorrow and or next time I come and try to pay you. But they said, no, you don't need to. And some people said, I'm going to make a donation to the food bank. And I said, that would be great if you want to do that. But, again, you don't have to do anything. So this went on for about 40 minutes, I think. And they got people out of there, and then the registers started working again. I think they had given away several thousand, $4,000 or $5,000 worth of groceries by that time. And that seemed to be the end of the story. People went home, and you know, everything else was fine. A few days later, a couple of days later, one of those customers called the local newspaper, the Hartford Courant, and said, do you know what happened at Whole Foods the other night? And told the story to one of their columnists, who then wrote a little story along the lines of the holiday spirit is alive and well at Whole Foods, and why can't other companies be like this, and so forth. And that story, as these kinds of things do, they started getting shared on the website of the newspaper. It started bouncing around the country, and it made its way into the top 10 the most emailed stories of the day in Yahoo. And that's how the CEO sitting in Austin 3-4 days later saw it come across his computer. Mm-hmm. And he forwarded that to me and said, you know, this is something nice that happened in Hartford, but this kind of thing happens all the time.
Yeah.
Our people do the right thing, right? And they don't have to ask anybody's permission. And they don't do it because they think it's going to result in positive publicity, etc. But it inevitably ends up, you know, becoming a positive thing for us. Because think about $4,000 worth of groceries versus the goodwill that they earned.
Sure.
Through those actions. But again, they did it for the right reason. You know,
yeah,
it's not that the store manager did not put out a press release saying, look how good we are.
Sure.
And so when you do consistently do the right things for the right reasons, mm-hmm. you know, the universe is, I think, operates in a way that that comes back to people, you know, dramatically, you know, enhanced.
We believe that here at Better Worldians Radio. And, you know, I also thought that that story is a great nexus of a lot of things you talk about in the book because, you know, it's at that center of accountability, caring, and creativity. You know, as a manager myself, I know if people get micromanaged and they have no responsibility, they're almost automata, right? But if they have the ability to be creative and be responsible for something, then you're amazed by what people can do. And that's what invests them, and that's what gets them caring about the company and about the customer. And it's a powerful experience.
Yeah.
I know you've heard a lot from business leaders since the book was first released. Could you share one of those stories that you've heard?
Share what?
Share one of the stories you've heard from business leaders that were inspired by the book after it was released.
Well, I mean, there have been a lot of companies around the world that have been embracing these ideas and starting to change. I'm working with a big food processing company right now that's doing that. I'm working with a big steel company in Korea that has embraced these ideas and have articulated. You know, so again, all of them are experiencing. It takes time. But you start to experience the positive benefits of this, you know, pretty quickly, actually. You know, within a year or so, you start to see greater levels of employee engagement and caring and commitment and passion and all of those kinds of things. So it really does make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you also told a story in a book that struck me really powerfully. You saw a billboard that said, it was in New York City, I believe, at a bus stop, if your company cared, it would be in the caring business.
That's right,
just,
yes.
It's really horrible.
You know? Yeah, this was from careerbuilder.com, which is a website to help people find jobs, right? And so it reflects kind of the cynicism, but also the reality, unfortunately, that most businesses explicitly say that they care about one thing, which is, you know, shareholder wealth maximization.
Yeah.
And so that's such a damaging, you know, thing that we really have to get rid of that. And it's not even true. I mean, if you look at the law, the law does not say that the fiduciary responsibility of the board of directors and the CEOs of the company is to maximize shareholder profits. It doesn't say that. CEOs do not work for investors. They work for the corporation, and the corporation is its own thing.
Yeah.
And the flourishing of the corporation is what you're supposed to be accountable for. And that means the flourishing of every aspect of that corporation, which means all of the stakeholders.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the more important aspects of that you brought attention to is that society is steadily moving toward a better world. You you know, you say in the book, in which a more accurate statement would be, if your company doesn't care, it won't be in business for long. So I was hoping in the last, we have about 2 minutes left, if you could tell us about that better world that you envision, that the principles learned in conscious capitalism can help bring about.
Yeah, so we envision a world in which, first of all, we can bring the benefits of modernity and greater prosperity and a sense of well-being to more and more people in society. You know, we still have, because we have a billion people living in extreme abject poverty still, but we have 3 billion living on less than $3 a day. So there's a lot of unmet needs in the world. And how are those needs going to be met? They will not be met by governments or even by nonprofits or religious organizations. Those institutions cannot lift people out of poverty. It's only business is the institution that has done that and that can do that. And that makes business ultimately a heroic institution. And so we need to spread freedom around the world, because the real issue is really, ultimately, we talk about income inequality, which is important, but it's really not the unequal distribution of income so much as the unequal distribution of opportunity to enable people to be uplifted through the institution of business. So our vision is that we spread the ideas around business, but not just business, but a conscious approach to business, a loving, caring approach, which is rooted in truly understanding the deepest human motivations around higher purpose, which is led by individuals who combine tremendous strength with a tremendous capacity for love and care. And they create businesses in which we promote not just human, but really planetary flourishing of all species into the indefinite future. And that's really, I think, something that's very much within our grasp. We see that it's already possible. It exists. Companies are doing this in their communities, many of them, and it's simply a matter of extending that and changing the way that people think about these things. You know, if you change your perspective, then everything changes. If you start to look at things through a different lens, change the mental models that we have grown up with about business, that it is about selfishness, exploitation, and greed, and it's all about making money. And if we believe that, then we're going to act that way. But if we change the story, and we say that business is good because it's based on creating value, that business is fundamentally ethical because it's about voluntary exchange. It's not about coercing anybody. You don't have coercive power, but it's also business uplifts human beings. It's noble and it's heroic. It lifts people out of poverty. When we recognize the power of that story and the opportunity that we have to impact the lives of people on a huge scale around the world, then it becomes very energizing and very exciting to be part of business.
You know, Raj, you say in your book, under the paragraph, A Shared Dream in the back of the book, that your movement is quite simple, that one day virtually every business will operate with a sense of higher purpose, integrate the interest of all stakeholders, develop and elevate conscious leaders, and build a culture of trust, accountability, and caring. And frankly, that's where we resonate the most, because we here at Better Worldians do this show because our vision is to make the world a better place by focusing on and encouraging the very best in everyone. We focus on positive behaviors, positive values, positive change, and we accomplish our vision with a commitment to values, a focus on today and tomorrow's generations, trending technology, and a belief in capitalism as a force for good. So I'd like to particularly thank you for joining us today on Better Worldians Radio.
Thank you. It was my pleasure to be with you.
You're very, very welcome. You can find out more about Raj Sisodia's work by going to rajsisodia.com. And in the meantime, we'd like to thank everyone for listening today. And you can join us also at the Better Worldian community at betterworldians.com. Until next time, please be a better worldian.
Thank you again for helping make the world just a little bit better this week. Please join your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel next Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope we've inspired you to do one small thing to help make a big difference. Join us at betterworldians.com to tell us what you've done to change the world. Thanks again for listening to the preceding program.
brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.